Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the second in our two-part series entitled The Mishloach Manot Myth. Exploring, especially today, the practical halacha of Mishloach Manot. As we spoke about last week, we focused a lot on the debate, the machloket, between the Trumat Hadeshen and Rav Shlomo Alkabetz. For the Trumat Hadeshen, Rabbi Yisrael Isselind, the purpose of Mishloach Manot is to provide food for someone's Purim Seuda. Then actually the Mishloach Manot is fundamentally just a derivative of that obligation. You need to have a festive meal on Purim itself, and in order to have that festive meal, right, someone needs to supply you with your with the food. That was the purpose, argued the Trumat Hadeshen, of Mishloach Manot. In contrast, of Shlomo Alkabetz, best known for being the author of Lecha Dodi, but also the author of, among other things, Manot HaLevi, a commentary to Megillat Esther, he says no. The purpose of Mishloach Manot is actually to increase friendship between people, right? Haman said we were scattered and dispersed. Mishloach Manot exists in order to, right, tie Jewish people together, to increase their bonds of friendship, to increase their love and sense of fraternity to one another. That, said Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, is the purpose of Mishloach Manot. And as we saw, right, one of the interesting ramifications of this debate is whether you actually need to provide food. If the purpose of Mishloach Manot is to provide food for the Seuda, then obviously there needs to be food. However, if it's to increase, right, joy and friendship, not necessarily. Hence why I pointed out last week, right, Manot HaLevi, the book written by Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, was the Mishloach Manot of, right, of Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, right? It was Mishloach Manot he gave to his father-in-law, right? He wrote this book. And there were rabbis throughout Jewish history who would write books. The Rama, Rabbi Moshe Isserles, also wrote a commentary to Megillat Esther when he was unable to, right? He wasn't able to be in his home. They were in, I had the story last week and I'd written it down, so listen to the end of the shiur last week for the actual story, but basically he wasn't able to be in his home, food was scarce, and so he wrote a commentary to Megillat Esther as Mishloach Manot instead to give to his father. That is the well-known and central debate between the Trumat Hadeshen and Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, and what we can actually see them as is two extremes of a spectrum. Right, most views of Mishloach Manot fall somewhere in between. Right, people are less likely to think you can actually not give food, but at the same time, it's rare to see the insistence that the food must be food you can serve at a seuda. Nonetheless, as we'll see tonight, there are some aspects to Mishloach Manot and to the laws of Mishloach Manot where this debate between the Trumat Hadeshen and Shlomo Alkabetz gets raised to answer various situations. But what I want to focus on tonight are six myths. Six things that if you were to walk around and ask people about what needs to be done for Mishloach Manot, which is very or conversation starter, but if you were to do so, right, you would find people often regurgitating at least some of these myths. In some cases, they are true myths. There is not a source that seems to suggest at all in the slightest that it's actually a thing. In other cases, they're not true myths. It's more a machloket, it's a debate. Often the things we say very confidently you cannot do or must do, not just in the realm of Mishloach Manot, but we're focusing on Mishloach Manot, right, is actually far more debated than we realize. And so what we're going to do is, right, in each of them, we're not going to probably give it its due. Each one of these is probably half a share. And instead, we're just going to look at a few key sources relevant. But we're going to get, hopefully, a better understanding of the halachot of Mishloach Manot. And I should stress, not that I actually fear anyone will walk away from this year with this thought, but right, the purpose of learning the true halachot of Mishloach Manot is not for us to turn around to others and call into question the Mishloach Manot they are giving us, but rather when we ourselves are giving Mishloach Manot to people, right, I think sometimes panic sets in, right? We start to fear, we think of, right, we are giving Mishloach Manot to someone who knows more than us, and now all of a sudden, oy vavoy, we're going to give them Mishloach Manot, they're going to realize we're an ingrate, we don't know what we're doing, and so we panic, and I think that's part of why so many of these myths come about, is because we kind of create this hyper-stringent series of laws about Mishloach Manot, almost as a reflex to ensure that the people we give to aren't going to, in some way, right, think we don't know what we are doing. But in truth, sometimes by so fastidiously adhering to these myths, that actually risks revealing that, right, we're not actually 100% sure. And the truth is, until I think last year, I think I started getting serious Mishloach Manot questions. And that was the first year I actually had to do like a true deep dive into, right, what actually counts as opposed to just kind of relying on a few heuristics and myths that I thought were true. With that, we begin with the most famous of all the myths. You need to give items on which two different brachot must be made. This is the classic, right? What is clear and what is obvious is the following. We also saw this source last week. The Gemara says, right, Tone Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef taught the following. The Megillah says, Umishloach manot ishlareyehu, right? The Megillah says we have to give, right? We have to send portions to one another. Shtei manot leish echad. Right, two portions to one person, umatanot le'evyonim, and gifts to the poor, right? Shtei matanot, two gifts, lishnei b'nei Adam, to two people. It's worth just pointing out the underlying logic here, which is important to just know, which is whenever a law mandates a plural, and it's written in a plural form, the obligation is always the minimum number of plurality, which is two. So mishloach manot ishlareyehu, right? Manot is a plural, but it's just to one individual, ishlareyehu. So it's two portions to one person. Matanot la'evyonim, that's a plural to plural, hence two to two. Right, that's basically why that's the minimum, and thus the Shulchan Aruch codifies the following: Chayav lishloach lechavero shtei manot basar or shel minei ochlim. Right, you're obligated to give to your friend, to your fellow, two gifts of meat or some other type of food. Shne'emar, as it says, umishloach manot ish l'reyehu, shtei manot le'ish echad, two gifts to one person. V'chol ha'marbe lishloach l'reyim meshuvach. And if you want to send to more and more people, amazing, great, shkoyach, right, that's praiseworthy. But right, the obligation, and this is always important to remember, and I think, and maybe an important undercurrent of all of this, and I think I mentioned this yesterday too, right, you want to make sure you get one Mishloach Manot right. Right? Now we'll see examples later on, and I don't necessarily advise this, but I'll mention situations where certain Rabbonim were machmir, were stringent, to always make sure, right, they sent one Mishloach Manot that conformed to every possible stringency, right, to make sure they checked the box. But if you're giving out 10, 20, 30, right, maybe there is a worry that you're giving it to someone and they don't realize this is kind of your free hit. You're just being nice. But right, you only need to give one Mishloach Manot that actually counts. It's actually real, right? You don't necessarily want to mislead people into thinking everything else is also okay. But right, you want to give more to more people. Amazing. That's praiseworthy. But fundamentally, the obligation is just to one person. This comment of the Shulchan Aruch here is almost certainly the origin of the myth, right? Because he gives his example, shtei manot basar, give two gifts of meat, right? So by the way, meat famously only has one bracha, right? This is how, right? This is the biggest, most, I mean, we'll see more, even more explicit proof, but this is the obvious reason why you don't need two brachot, is because the Shulchan Aruch says, give two pieces of meat, shahakol and shahakol, right? There's no other way of, right? If anyone's invented mezonot meat, please let me know. I am interested in knowing, but it's two pieces of meat. However, there is a little bit of vagueness here, and right, there's a little bit of ambiguity, and I think, right, this is my pet theory as to how this two brachot myth developed. The reality is most people aren't right, living their lives straight out of the word of the Shulchan Aruch, and they know you have to give two foods. There's one really certain, and we know as Jews, halacha tends to be hyper-specific. So there's one way of guaranteeing that the two items are two items. If they're two different brachot, you know they're two different items, right? Whereas if you give two of the same item, right, where's that line? We'll see examples of what that line is in a few moments, but I think this is the origin of the myth, This desire to give two portions to one person. What's a good way of knowing portion A versus portion B? What if I give two things of two different brachot? That way it's obvious they're two separate things, but absolutely unnecessary. It's not something we need to do. Further proof, admittedly, right, what you are about to see is source number three. Probably was like 45 minutes of going down rabbit holes of a really, really interesting point. And we're just looking at the Aruch HaShulchan's dismissal of the entire idea. Source number three. Aval shnei chatichot mimin echot. Right? Two pieces of meat. And the idea here and what I was searching for was the discussion of, okay, what if you go to the butcher and you buy an incredibly nice piece of steak and then you chop it in two? Is that two pieces? Is right, because now you don't need two different brachot, can we say? And the answer is, right, says the Aruch HaShulchan, eino mo'il. You can't actually give two literally identical pieces, right? Dechi mipnei shechotchan nechshavam l'shnayim. Since when did the idea of cutting make it two? Right, well, the Aruch HaShulchan and others who address this issue never invoke is the two brachot rule, because it's just not a thing, right? You can't give, right? You can't take something and chop it in two. That doesn't count. But if you give, right, two, right, we'll look in a second at source number four, which will give us examples. If you give two things that are different but the same bracha, that's absolutely fine, as we see with Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Halichot Shlomo, which talks about kind of the practices of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and analyzes them. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach was the major rabbi in Israel in the 20th century, one of the most significant halachic figures of the recent past. So Halichot Shlomo takes us through it. It goes through the year, right, his various different practices and various things. And here it says explicitly, Shnei Chalakim Mimin Echad, two pieces of the same kind, Hachalukim B'Ta'amam, that are differentiated by taste, Kugon hachelak ha'elyon v'hatachton shel basar of ukeduma, like the upper and lower parts of chicken. I assume that's white meat and dark meat. Chashuvim kishtei manot. If you give those, it's fine. You give someone fried chicken, grilled chicken, it's fine. You give someone regular chocolate and raspberry flavored chocolate, fine. It doesn't matter that it's the same bracha. It just has to be clearly and identifiably distinct. So if you give someone a cooked steak and a pot of meatballs, right, they're both shahakol, but they're both obviously different things, right? The two brachot rule is just a myth, right? You don't need to give two things that are two different brachot. You just need to give two distinct items. Yes, it's true. A really simple heuristic for knowing you have two distinct items is two different brachot. They're definitionally going to be completely different if that's what you are doing, but absolutely unnecessary. You can give two shahakols. You can give two ha'etzes, yada, yada, yada. It's all fine. It's not an issue. There is no need whatsoever to insist that your mishloach manot contain two brachot. That's myth number one. The second kind of myth, and admittedly, as we start going further and further down these myths, most of them are probably less. At a certain point, the hook of these are myths gets a little bit lost, but it's, here are important rules of Mishloach Manot that maybe you knew or maybe you didn't. One refers to kind of the types of food. Right? So this is an interesting thing, which is, are there certain types of foods you can give or can't give? Right? So now I know it doesn't matter about brachot, but like, what foods can I give and what foods can't I give? So the most important thing to recognize is that drinks count. It's perfectly timed that I decided to take a drink of my Fanta at this point. That was not planned, but that was perfectly coincidental, right? You can give drinks as Mishloach Manot, as the Mishnah Berurah says, and it's interesting bearing in mind what we talked about last week with the Manot Halevi. The Mishnah Berurah says, right, velo begadim v'sha'arei devarim. You can't give clothing or other kinds of items. V'hu hadin mashke deshapir dami. Right, but the law is, right, drinks are also acceptable. Dishtia bichlal achila, because ultimately drinking is considered in the same, right, it's in the same realm as eating. V'chein, Sagi ba'echad ochel ve'echad mashka. And if you give one item of food and one item of drink, it's absolutely fine. Right? You could give, right, theoretically, a bottle of soda and a piece of meat. They're both shehakol. Doesn't matter, right? Uve inan sheyihye min ochel hamavushal below basar. But it is important to note that the food has to be cooked and not raw. D'mishloach manot hara'oi miyad la'achila mashma. It needs to be, you can eat it right then and there, right? It needs to be possible that someone hands you the food and you could literally start eating it then and there. V'yesh omrim dekevan shehu shachut v'ra'oi lehitbashel miyad. Shari, but there are those who say, and again, this is a whole discussion in and of itself, but the Mishnah Berurah acknowledges that there are those who think, no, you can give raw meat, right? As long as you could cook, right? If you gave... It's not frozen, right? If you defrosted a steak from your freezer, right? There are those who say, right, if you now literally gave me a raw steak and you're like, you know, turn on your oven, yada, 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 get going, right? And I can cook it then and there. That is ostensibly potentially fine. Again, Mishnah Berurah doesn't really like that idea, but here we see the tremendous range of food items that you can bring. And indeed, this continues with the Rosh Yosef. So the Rosh Yosef is Rabbi Yosef ben Meir Ta'omim. He lived in the 18th century in what was then Poland, but is now Ukraine. And he is the author of the Prima Gadim. The Prima Gadim we've definitely seen before in Shiurim, a very, very, very incredibly influential super commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, right? A very, very important sefer. But right, the author also wrote a bunch of other things, including, right, some commentaries, some ideas on various tractates, various masechtot of Shas, including he wrote the Rosh Yosef on Masechet Megillah and others, and he writes the following. Chayav lishloach shnei manot basar umine ochlim. Right, you're obligated to send two different portions of meat or some other kind of food. Ein raya lomar she'im shalach shtei peirot mimen echad d'lo yatza. And interestingly here, he seems to disagree with other people who says you can actually send two fruits and that's fine, that are the same kind. Right, so he thinks you could send two apples, which ostensibly everything we saw earlier is a problem. But here the crucial point is, right, let's not get too bogged down in that confusing aspect here. The crucial thing here is, right, you can send fruits, right? You can send all forms of food. It's all fine. Again, the two brachot rule is not a thing, right? But you can send two differentiated items, drinks, fruit, whatever. And very interestingly is the notion of candy. So in Piskei Teshuvot, which is a sefer that collects a lot of other opinions, the source number 7, V'nahug alma lishloach mine matika. So, right, people are accustomed nowadays to send sweet treats, to send candy. And then he offers actually a really, really, like, nice... I was going to say sweet, but I didn't want to then do the pun. But he offers a really, really nice notion behind this idea. The efshar leishev haminhag, and we can explain the custom. Dekevan dechiyov ha'av lechonech yeladav haketanim gam b'mitzvot zudat purim shehu mitzvot hayam, right? Because parents have an obligation to educate their children in the mitzvot of Purim. V'simchat haketanim b'minei megadim, and you make children happy with, right, sweet treats. Imkein yesh harvacha leva'ale se'uda mimine hamatika shenotnim zot liyaladehem. Right, it's a good, right, there's a value to giving kids candy, right? Umakayim bazem mitzvat chinuch, and that's going to make them, right, you're inculcating that sense of joy, which they're supposed to be feeling, right? You want children to feel joy. How do you feel joy? You give them candy. So, right, that's why you give candy as mishloach manot. Umakayim bazem mitzvat chinuch, ukilshon hashulchan arach, uketanim misamchim bekaliot ve'egozim, right? Children like nuts, they like treats, right? These sorts of things. So, piskei teshuvot, and he's quoting others. I'd mentioned in my drasha this past Shabbat, Rabbi Chaim ben Venist, the author of Knesset Hagdola and Shiuri Knesset Hagdola, right? That also, he also there talks about the idea of sending candy, right? It is we don't need to go as far as the Trumat Hadeshen, that you must send food for the Seuda, right? You can send anything you want. It can be all the same bracha. It doesn't matter, right? And perhaps there is, and what's nice about the Piskei Teshuvot is you could even argue, if you're sending candy, you're actually achieving other values too. Right, and that's, I think, a very interesting idea, just generally overarching all of these various things, which is, and I think this came up a little bit last week after we'd stopped the recording in a question, with a lot of these ideas of Mishloach Manot and a lot of the values that may be fulfilled through the sending of Mishloach Manot, the reality is it's hard to check all the boxes, but there are going to be certain values that you're going to subscribe to, that you're going to be able to fulfill, is a better way of phrasing it. There are certain values you're going to be able to fulfill through your Mishloach Manot that you might not otherwise if you go kind of a different route. But this is another important idea to recognize when it comes to Mishloach Manot, which is that you can give anything you want. As long as it is food, you can give it as Mishloach Manot. However, stop the presses, because that's not completely clear. Because I would say this is somewhat of a myth in the sense of that the way we tend to do our Mishloach Manot is, right, one size fits all. We just make, and again, this is why it's so important to remember the obligation is actually to give to just one person, right? But we tend to do a one size fits all approach, which is, right, you make 10, you make 20, you make 30 of the same thing. You don't necessarily differentiate, oh, I'm going to give to person X this, I'm going to give to person Y that. And this has a tremendous number of interesting ramifications. And the truth is, right, I would say the bulk of the sources we're going to discuss are consumed by this topic. Because it is a really, really interesting one that we just rarely seem to consider. But it's actually fascinating when you think about it. And once you start thinking about it, you realize it's really, really hard to dismiss. And it all starts with the continuation of the Gemara we saw in source one, teaching us that you have to give Mishloach Manot. And then we read the following story. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia Shadarle le Rabbi Oshaya Atma di Igla Tilta Vegarba da Chamra. Right? So Rabbi Yehuda Nesia sent to Rav Oshaya the leg of a third-born calf and a jug of wine, right? That was his Mishloach Manot. Shlachle, Rav Oshia sent him a response. Kiyamta banu rabbeinu, you have fulfilled through us our teacher, u Mishloach Manot ish l're'ehu, u matanot le'evyonim. Oh my goodness, Rav Yehuda Nesia, that was so great. That was such an amazing gift that you've actually fulfilled. You've done a tufa. Right, not only did you give me Mishloach Manot, but because I, Rav Oshaya, am poor, right, you've also fulfilled Matanot Le'Evyonim. Great, very, very nice Gemara, right? This is how the Bavli frames this story. However, there is a very, very similar but fundamentally different version of the story that occurs in the Yerushalmi. And the Yerushalmi says the following. Rabbi Yudan Nesia, so, you know, just Shalach le Rabbi Hoshaya. You know, the Hoshaya Rabbah, the great Rab Hoshaya, right? These names are basically the same names with kind of different diminutives or pronunciations, like Yudan is Yehuda and Hoshaya is Oshaya, right? These are not necessarily different people in the story. It's just different naming conventions, which is not unusual in the Bavli versus the Yerushalmi, just like, right, Pierre, I was going to say Pierre and Peter, but that's probably a bad example. But there are examples, right? I can't think of example. Obviously, all the examples, Michael and Michael. Well, that's a good one. Michael and me, actually, when I was in Boston, one of the kids in my shul, and I also taught him in the school, right, his parents called him Michael, and he went as Michael in the school, right? It's the same name. Right? Yudan, Yehuda, Oshaya, Hoshaya. But that's not why we're looking at these two different contrasting Gemaras. Source number 9. What did Rav Yudan send to Rav Hoshaya? Chada itam v'chad lagin dechama. Right? A roast and a pitcher of wine. Shalach v'amarle. Right, so Rav Hoshaya responds, Kiyamta banu u matanot le'evyonim. Right, you have fulfilled matanot le'evyonim. In other words, right, especially with the context of source number 8, this is what we call a passive-aggressive response, right? Thank you for giving this poor person a gift, right? The most minimal possible thing ever. Thank you. So what happens? Chazar v'shalach leichad ogel v'chad gerev dechamar. Right, so then what he sent, so then Rav Yudan sends back another thing, a calf and a barrel of wine, right? A far grander and more significant gift. Shalach va'amarle, right? Rav Hoshaya responds, Kiyamta banu mishloach manot ishlareo. Now you've also fulfilled mishloach manot. So in this story, we see, right, differentiated giving, right? Rav Hoshaya was insulted by the first gift. You've given me a gift fit for a poor person. Thanks. Well done. Right? The next gift, oh, this was generous. This was nice. Matanot, this was Mishloach Manot. It sets up this idea that certain people will receive certain gifts, certain Mishloach Manot, differently to others. In theory, if you give one person something, they will be offended, right? They'll just be like, oh, you gave me a Hershey bar and a Cliff bar. Wow, thanks, right? And there are other people who will really appreciate the kinds of Mishloach Manot you give. The Ritva. Rabbeinu Yom Tov ben Avraham, I always say this every single time I quote the Ritva, and I apologize, but I still am always amused, right? Whenever you want to find out the biography of a rabbi, you just Google their name, their acronym, it will always come up, except for the Ritva, because at this point, so many of you know, it's a set of curtains in IKEA. So, right, Ritva, just Googling Ritva will not help you unless you really, really want to buy curtains, and then it's going to be very helpful. But the Ritva, one of the very prominent Rishonim, a very, very important medieval rabbi. So it's interesting to note a very important idea in the general learning of Gemara. We may have discussed this in previous Shiurim for one reason or another. It's the notion of Girsa'ot, which is text variants. So nowadays, if you want to know what does the Gemara say, I mean, nowadays, just go online and you look it up. But fine, we have books, right? We have books that print a standardized Gemara. But this obviously wasn't always the case. For a large part of Jewish history, it was handwritten documents. And what this meant was these documents were kind of passed down and written by people. And, you know, what was on there was passed down, was passed down, was passed down. And this led to variants, right? There are lots and lots of people who devote a lot of their lives to studying variant manuscripts, yada, 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 trying to figure out what is the correct version of the text, right? None of that concerns us per se, except for the fact that, already noting that the Bavli and the Yerushalmi debate, you know, have differences of this story, variants of this story crept in. And as the Ritva is talking about this story, something very important to understand is the Ritva has a different version of the story. The Ritva's story seems to be, in his Gemara, far more similar to the Yerushalmi than the Bavli. And he says this explicitly, like Rashi's version seems to be different to mine, right? And he talks us through it. It's basically the Yerushalmi's story. And therefore the Ritva explains, right, this Yerushalmi as though it's the definitive understanding. And he says, Perush shelo haita yekara hatshura be'enav, that originally, right, Rav Oshia was offended. It wasn't appropriate. It wasn't fitting. It wasn't precious enough in his eyes. Va'amar she'ena matana la'adam kamohu. That wasn't a gift fit for a person like him. V'lo yatza yirechovat mishloach manot. And therefore it wasn't good enough to give. I think the implication might also be it's not as much the recipient as the giver, right? If you are known for being an incredibly wealthy person, and you are giving very, very stingy Mishloach Manot, right? People are going to be offended. Oh, you know, you're just giving meh, right? You're not treating me right, right? V'lo yatza yidechova Mishloach Manot shloreho hadav shalach le klamash zat shura haruyalach. It was only when it was sent next that it was finally fitting for him. So fundamentally, there is this idea. It's the giver and the recipient. It's not purely transactional, Right, it's not here. Here is my bag. Here is your bag. Right? And who cares? No, it's who is the person giving the bag? And who is the person receiving the bag? And is this considered, right, appropriate all round? And this is a very, very important idea when it comes to certain people's qualities of life or sensitivities. So one example comes in source number 11, Rav Moshe Sternbach's, oh wow, I put a lot of it on the source sheet, Rav Moshe Sternbach's Tshuvot V'Hanhagot. So Rav Moshe Sternbach, we've been learning a lot of his Mordei Muzmanim lately at BIEV, particularly during Mincha and Maariv, but he's also the author of many answers to halachic questions. And he's talking about this notion of, again, Mishloach Manot and this story from the Bavli, the Yerushalmi, etc., etc., etc. V'hinei midvarav nishma chidush gadol. We learn something really important here. Shalom masbik lekiyum hamitzvah sheyishmana achat chashuvah. It's not enough to give one significant gift. Rak tzarich sheshtei hamanot yiyu chashuvah. You need to give two, right? Two gifts. Both of them have to be chashuv. Both of them have to be significant. The afsha ha'egal chashuva. Even though the calf was significant, adayin lo yatza ad sheyihye gam b'yayin shi'or chashiva. Right? He understands this story to be, right, it's really all about the wine. Right? The wine, you give a pitcher of wine, that's not enough. You have to give a large quantity of wine for it to be considered significant. V'zeu hilchata rabta b'mishloach manot nishloach shtei manot chashuvot davka. This is a really important halacha. You must give specifically davka two gifts of significance. Uma shenistafku im taloi b'chashivot. And this is where this paragraph is really, really interesting, right? So now we want to wonder, how do we determine the notion of significance? Eitzal hanotein. She'etzlo nikra chashuv, is it according to the giver? V'hayinu she'tzarech lafi oshro, and therefore I assess, I am giving mishloach manot, I assess my own wealth, my own kind of like standards, and I have to give based on those. Otaloi b'chashivuto etzal hamakaba. Or am I supposed to give it based on the recipient? Right, maybe the recipient is someone who is known for having very refined taste, right? We know this person likes the finer things in life. They're very particular about what they eat, what they drink, right? And then it doesn't matter about me. What matters is them. And thus he says the following, Yesh litlot b'tam mitzvot mishloach manot. Perhaps it can all be determined on the reason for mishloach manot. Shalom afarashim shehu mitam reyut. If there are those who say that the whole purpose of Mishloach Manot is again to increase this conviviality, it's to increase this friendship within people. Taloi benotein she migala rayot b'mana chashuva etzlo. Right, it depends on what the giver considers significant. Right, I am trying to make you happy, so I give you something that I know to be important and that I know to be significant, and you realize, oh, they just gave me something that they consider significant. But if I'm giving you food for your su'uda, as taloi b'makabal, it depends, it all depends on you. Because, right, if you are someone who only eats really, really high quality cuts of meat, and I give you a Cliff Bar and a can of, right? No, you're not serving that at your su'uda, right? If I'm just trying to increase friendship, you will really, really appreciate the fact that I knocked on your door with my Cliff Bar and my can of Coke. But if you're supposed to serve this at the su'uda and everyone knows you're the kinds of person who eats very specific kinds of food, right, then it matters. Ulama'asa, says Rav Moshe Sternbach, practically ra'oi lahachmir k'shtei hadeot. It's appropriate to be stringent to both opinions. Vim echad mehem asher. And if one of the, if someone in this whole thing is wealthy, yishalach la'adam echad kafi hana'at asher. Right? You should give to that person, right, according to their wealth. So if it is known that one of the people I'm giving mashloach manot to, again, is particularly particular, right, I should take that into consideration. Even more interesting are other sensitivities people may have. The Rivervoat Ephraim whose last name I forget, but his first name is Ephraim, a prominent 20th century rabbi. He writes the following. Uvisholeach litzamchuni. You send to a vegetarian. Ma'achalei basar. You send them meat. V'yodea shehu tzamchuni. But you knew they were a vegetarian. As yitchein delo kiyem ha-mitzvah. It seems like you don't fulfill the mitzvah. That kind of seems obvious, right? You know, potentially either way, right? Obviously, it's not fit for the su'uda, but also, right, if I know you are a vegetarian and I give you meat anyway, that's just insensitive. That's not increasing your sense of any friendship whatsoever. That's just being mean. Uvishalach davar, then things get interesting. Uvishalach davar shehamakabel lo machmeh al atzmo shelo le'achol. V'hasholeach machmeh. What about the following? Let's say I am machmir, I am stringent to only have Cholov Yisroel. I'm not, by the way, but let's say I am. But you are not. Is that okay? So as Yitchen Diatzen, that seems fine, says the Rav Avot Ephraim, right? I can send you things I personally won't eat out of Chumra, out of stringency. Uvisholeach lemekabel shem machmir. But if I am not machmir on Chalav Yisrael and you are, and obviously this is known, and I send you stuff that's not Chalav Yisrael, yitchein delo kiyem ha-mitzvah. It seems here that you did not fulfill the mitzvah. This is a very interesting idea, right? And let's take each of them in turn, because source number 13 is going to complicate our understanding of the second idea. But the first idea with the vegetarian is this idea that, right, someone, and again, source number 13 is actually going to be, actually, let's read source number 13 first, because this is actually going to be the absolute opposite of source number 12. Piskei Tshuvot says the following. Aval, hasholeach mine ma'achal behechshar shehamakabel makbid lo le'echol, ma'oto hechshar. Hechshar. So I send you something with a hechshar that you don't eat. We're not talking about, right, sketchy hechshers. We're talking about, let's say, well-known hechshers that you've decided to be stringent and not accept. Kevan, she'eno isor rak chumrot ba'alma. Given that the issue here, the prohibition, is a pure stringency and that's it. Yatsa yedei chuvato. Then you have fulfilled your obligation, right? So the Piskei Tshuvot says, no, you are allowed to send things to people if what motivates them is chumra. V'hu hadin be'im shalech l'chaver o min ma'achal, shemachmat b'riyot eino ochlo. And the law is that if you send something to someone that out of health concerns they don't eat, yatza yedei chovato, you have fulfilled your obligation. So let's pass these two out. First, we have, right, what we might call lifestyle choices / genuine health, right? Vegetarians, right? You, right? Piskei Tshuva actually thinks ostensibly you could, right? It's actually far more interesting with diabetics or people who are celiac. So in Nishmat Avraham, which is Rav Avraham Steinberg's work, where it's all like the medical halacha stuff, right? He says, you can't send a diabetic chocolate, right? And he quotes with Shlomo Zalman Orbach, who agreed, right? He spoke with Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach about it. He agreed, right? You can't send diabetics chocolate. However, he quotes, and I forget who disagreed with him, not because he thinks ram chocolate down the throats of diabetics, but part of the thing is, well, hold on a second, right? Some people have different issues than others, right? I'm more confident about this with celiacs than diabetics, right? Some celiacs, if they eat a sandwich, right, call the funeral company. Other celiacs, if they eat a sandwich, they're just going to have an unpleasant evening, right? Ultimately, they might not want to eat it, but they could. And so the Nishma Avram records this debate with someone else within his work, where this person is basically saying, some people might be able to still tolerate it, they just wouldn't want it. So maybe you don't need to be as concerned about these things, right? The general consensus, I would say, is don't give to people you know to have specific health issues or to have specific, I would say, strong sensitivities like vegetarians, right? Don't send them, right? Mishloach manot that they won't eat, right? You could ask, right? What about, right? I don't, right? Famously, I'm not the biggest fan of vegetables or many foods for that matter. I'm a very picky eater. I'm still a four-year-old at heart. Right? So if you sent me a bunch of vegetables and fruit for Mishloach Manot, right? Did you fulfill your obligation? It's a very interesting question because I'm not going to eat it, right? I'm not going to touch it. That goes in the pile of stuff I'm never going to touch. But it's a very interesting idea. But definitely with these real sensitivities, with these real health issues, with allergies, right? That's something to be sensitive for. Even more interestingly, though, is this idea of chumrah. And perhaps we have to parse it, and we're not going to tonight, but it depends on what the chumrah is. And I think this is a very, very complicated question in its own right. But there are some stringencies people do out of, right, I don't want to use the terms like pure motivation because that implies the others don't. But I think there are different gradations of stringency, right? There are certain things where if you are part of a certain community, you are naturally stringent. If you subscribe to a certain, right, rabbinic philosophy, you're stringent about certain things. Those are very, very different too. Oh, I have the chumrah a day calendar, and today my chumrah is I'm no longer trusting such and such a heksha, right? That's maybe different. So, right, but people you know to be machmir, right, they won't eat. It's not worth sending them stuff that they're just not going to be able to eat because it kind of defeats the point, you know, in all directions. So that's the general idea of, unfortunately, it's not one size fits all, right? You have to give. I don't think, necessarily, right, we need to take this so seriously so as to kind of like no one's going to give gifts now to the people with the really, really good taste for fear that that Mishloach Manot will be rejected. But I do think a little bit of thought of, oh, if I'm giving to these people, they're not going to be able to eat X. They're not going to be able to eat Y. They're not going to want to eat Z, right? So switch that around a little bit. Whereas if I'm giving to those people, that's fine. Someone I might just be able to give, you know, the brown lunch bag to. Whereas other people, right, and there's a really interesting, I didn't put it on the source sheet, but Rav Soloveitchik learns from another story in the Gemara, this notion of reciprocity, right? Reciprocity kind of holds true of Mishloach Manot. Like if you come to my door with a beautiful, right, you went out and you bought a beautiful serving dish and you have it all wrapped up with a whole manner of fine things, and then I hand you the brown paper lunch bag with a Clif Bar and a can of Coke, it's not quite the same. Right. And so I think that there is this idea of reciprocity. Now, the reality is I'm not going out and buying the fancy dish and wrapping it all up and everything on the off chance you're going to come knocking on my door with the same kind of idea. But there is at least this rough idea of, right, not just giving people random stuff at the back of your cupboards you're trying to clear out in the run up to Pesach. Right. If you know they're going to be giving you something slightly different. That is the general notion of, it's not just one size fits all. There needs to be a little bit more thought to the various Mishloach Manot that are given. One, and again, I'm not sure if this is a myth per se, but lest anyone think women do not need to give Mishloach Manot, they do. Famously, and this is not the time to discuss this fascinating and well-known Gemara we've mentioned before in other contexts, right? There are three, women are usually exempt from time-bound mitzvot. There are a few exceptions. One exception is the laws of Shabbat, right? The positive mitzvot of Shabbat, because women are also obligated to the negative mitzvot of Shabbat. There is another class of mitzvot that women are obligated in, which comes from the Gemara in a few different places, including source number 14, the Gemara near the very beginning of Masechet Megillah, Va'amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Nashim Chayavot, the Mikra Megillah, women are obligated in the reading of the Megillah. She'af hein hayu ba'oto hanes, for they too were part of the miracle. This is also true for the Pesach Seder. And this is also true for lighting Hanukkah candles. There's a lot of discussion around what does it mean they were included in the miracle. We're not going to get into that right now. But fundamentally, right, this is what, you know, Pesach, Purim, Hanukkah, or the three of which Nashim are, women are obligated in equally with men. And this leads to the Ramah pointing out, V'isha chayevet b'matanot le'evyonim u'mishloach manot ke'ish. It's not just Megillah, right? It's all the mitzvot of Purim. A woman is equally obligated in, and the Ramah says, right, therefore a woman needs to also be giving matanot le'evyonim u'mishloach manot. The Magen Avraham has a very interesting framing. So first he says, source number 16, Laura eating is horrid, Buzza. I've not seen women be particular about this. And that seems to be less a good thing and more a like, huh, right? I just, Rabbi Avraham Gombin, a prominent rabbi in Poland, was just looking through the Shulchan Aruch and I just noticed something. Women are supposed to give Mishloach Manot, and I've just never noticed them doing so. So he first suggests for Efshar Dedavka Ba'almana. He tries to reread the Ramah. The Ramah's not talking about all women, but widows. In other words, women who don't have a husband. Aval Isha Sheyesh La Ba'al. But a woman who's married. Ba'ala Mishalach Bishvila. Lekama B'nei Adam. No, let her husband send on her behalf. Right? To many different people. Right? In other words, the husband's giving, I give Mishloach Manot to one family, and that's on behalf of me. And then I give another one, that's on behalf of Ruthie, and that you know, it all kind of works that way. Umikol makom yesh lahachme. But the Magen Avraham says, no, we should be stringent. In other words, right, there should be some awareness of, like, and this is what's really interesting, again, about Mishloach Manot. I would say the way we do it is we send Mishloach Manot as a family, right? We don't, it's not like, here, you get Mishloach Manot from me and not Ruthie. And let's interpret that as some sort of passive-aggressive, right? And like, vice versa, like, oh, this would be great if you're the rabbi of the community and you are the family that don't get Mishloach Manot from me. And it's, that could be a very interesting way of expressing my frustration with certain people if all of a sudden certain people are not getting Mishloach Manot with me and then they're calling me in a panic. Why didn't you send me anything? Aha! It was because of 3 Tuesdays ago, you never answered the phone. But in all seriousness, right, there is this general idea, right, you will see people sometimes being a little bit more formal about this, right? They may turn to one person and be like, just FYI, this is from, right, this is from the family, but technically it's my Mishloach Manot, right? And then someone else does, you know, the other. But it's this general idea that, right, women are obligated in Mishloach Manot as much as men. How exactly the calculus, the divvying up of the distribution works is something to figure out. But the fundamental idea is nonetheless that women are obligated in giving Mishloach Manot just as men are. The final myth. There's actually another one. The second to last myth is actually came up at the end of last week's shiur. And it's funny because I had never thought about it, despite coming across it before, but it's never something that I'd really thought about too much, which is the need for a shaliach. And this, a messenger. The idea that I cannot give you Mishloach Manot myself, I need to give someone else Mishloach Manot to give on my behalf. And this comes from a rabbi, Yaakov Ettlinger, 19th century rabbi, best known for being the author of Aruch Laner, which is a very, very influential sefer. And he's also the author of a bunch of other things, including the responsa Binyan Tzion. And he says the following. And again, it comes from, he's trying to explain, right, ideas that are going on with other rabbis. Zulufiani is starting in my own opinion. Tam da Hamahari Brin Varama. He's trying to explain, right, what does the Rama, who's following the Mahari Brin, why are they framing things the way they do? For our purposes, it doesn't really matter. What matters is the following. Kumosha katov umishloach manot, velokativ venatun manot. Right, he points out something which is just, right, Hebrew 101, right? Matanot le'evyonim is giving gifts to the poor, right? If we were to continue that exact same wording structure when it came to Mishloach Manot, we would say venatun manot, giving gifts. But it says explicitly, umishloach manot, sending gifts. The Lashon Netina, Shayach Gabe Manot. And, right, this whole notion of giving is relevant to for gifts. Kedichtiv, as it says in Sefer Shmuel, V'Nathan Lepnina, Manot, V'Ulachana Yitain Mana Achat Afim, right, Elkanah would give gifts, right, he would give them. Mizen Nira, right, so Mishloach, so his point here is, Mishloach Manot is not just a turn of phrase, right, you could very easily construct Benatun Manot, so Mishloach Manot seems to be, that word Mishloach seems to be pulling a lot of weight. Mizen Nira, Delo hikpid hakatov ella al hashiloach. Right? The language is very particular when it comes to the sending. Dahainu she yotze min hamishaleach. You have to send it via a messenger. Aval matana lo ikre ma rak ma shebo miyad hanotein liyad hamakabel. When it comes to a gift, matana lo evyonim, that's just sticking it in the hand of the recipient. Aval kan dichtiv de mishloach manot de inze rak mitzvot shiloach mi sheshalach yatza. You have to send it al yidei shaliach, through a messenger, says the Binyan Sion, because that's the word, right? Mishloach manot literally means sending gifts. You need a messenger. And thus develops the idea that, right, you need to make sure you send something through a shaliach. However, the Kaf HaChaim is Rav Yaakov Chaim Sofer, a prominent Sfardi rabbi of the late 19th and early 20th century. In Kaf HaChaim, he rejects this. With the most exciting or boring, depending on your own personal feelings, arguments, which is, you just try to argue from verses in Tanakh. Oh boy, let's start looking up other verses in Tanakh. And thus he says the following: B'tshuva binyan sion, nistapek im havi ba'atzmo hamanot v'lo al yedei shaliach I yotze kevan dechtiv u'mishloach neima deb'inan davka al yedei shlichut. See over there, right? He frames Binyan Sion. V'li nir'e. De'ein yachol l'dak deik mizeh davka al yedei shaliach. Hold on a second. You can't derive too much from the word mishloach here. Dahare matzinu batora bekama mekomot lashon mishloach. Ve'eino al yedei shaliach. Hold on a second. There are tons of places in the Torah where this word mishloach occurs, and right, it never is it done through a messenger. Never is it done al yedei shaliach. Kamashakatov ben Noach. Right? What happens in the story of Noach? Vayishlach yado vayikacha. Right? He sent out his hand and he took it. Right? Noach stretches out his hand. Not has someone else send out his hand for him. No. Vagabe Avraham vayishlach Avraham et yado. Avraham sent out his hand. Again. It doesn't work al yedei shaliach. V'chitish l'chu chavshi me'imach. When you send a person free, it's talking about freeing a slave. Uke'ela rabot. There are many examples of that. Mikol makom. Im efshar yesh lasot al yedei shaliach mipnei hakavod. Now, nonetheless, if you want to send via a shaliach to honor the person you're giving it to, right, you want to kind of, right, it's kind of a show of significance that you send someone else, you know, on your behalf. Aval im efsha in levatal hamitzvah misham zev hu pasha. But there's no reason to not send mishloach manot because you don't have a shaliach, right? Mishloach manot does not need to mean you need a shaliach. It's just a turn of phrase which means sending, right? That's all it means, right? It's in the same linguistic realm as giving, right? The Binyan Sion's sensitivity to the fact that while they were writing Megillat Esther, they were kind of right-clicking and selecting synonyms to try and not be too repetitive, right, led the Binyan Sion to think, oh, it means something very, very specific. No. There is no need to give al yedei shaliach. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach would always give one mishloach manot al yedei shaliach in order to, right, check the box. Now, ultimately, right, if you're using, say, the shul's mishloach manot as your mishloach manot, that's definitionally al yedei shaliach, right? There's no issue with it being al yedei shaliach, but there's no need. There's no need to think that you must give it via messenger, but, right, you can just knock on people's doors and give it, right? That's absolutely fine. The final myth is more about framing mishloach manot more broadly. Which comes from, and I'm going to scroll up very, very quickly, the second source we saw, the Shulchan Aruch said the following, right? When it comes to Mishloach Manot, you only have to give one. V'chol ha-marbe l'shloach l'reyim m'shubach. You give more, great, grand, wonderful. However, there is a very, very important Rambam to remember and think about and consider, which is the following. Mutav la'adam la'harbot b'matanot evyonim. Mila harbot b'seudato v'shloach manot l'reyav. If you have to choose what you're going to go big on Purim, it's far better to go big on your charity than to go big on your Seuda and your Mishloach Manot, right? If you are the kinds of people who budget, right, and you have a Purim budget, and you decided to ring fence X amount of money for your Purim Seuda, for your Mishloach Manot, and for your Matanot Le'Evyonim, right, the budget should give ostensibly more weight to matanot le'evyonim, charity, than to the other things. She'ein sham simcha gedola umfo'ora. For there is no greater joy, no greater and more glorious joy. Ela l'sameach leiv aniyim v'almanot v'gerim. For there is no greater joy than bringing gladness to the poor, the orphans, the widows, the gerim, the converts. Here it means, right, it's always important to bear in mind, right, classically, gerim were kind of the immigrant class of people, and so they were right, this group of people were the people who were classically, right, the least able to subsist themselves. For bringing joy to these people, you know, it's basically it's similar to being the Shechina, the divine presence. Shne'emar, he quotes Yeshayahu, ruach, right, to revive the spirit of the lowly and to revive those with broken hearts. The idea, says Rambam, is Matanot le'evyonim is, of the other three mitzvot outside of Megillah, right, the most significant of all of them. Often, right, and I include myself in this, right, we are tempted to go big on the Seuda, we are tempted to go big on Mishloach Manot, and when it comes to Matanot le'evyonim, we're like, I will check my box and give tzedakah. But actually, right, we have to remember that, right, Judaism is a charity-centric religion. The idea of helping others is fundamentally simcha. This is a recurring theme of Rambam. So many places that simcha, true joy, is helping others, helping those in need, not enjoying oneself. There are other words to describe that that Rambam uses in various different halachot. And so this is also an important idea, right? People should enjoy Purim. And people often enjoy Purim by making nice Mishloach Manot and giving to their friends. And people should do that. But, right, the way I would frame it is, whatever is spent on Mishloach Manot, you should spend more, even if it's $1 more, just psychologically, right? You should spend more on your tzedakah, right? So if you decided to give whatever the amount was, to give the whole shul Mishloach Manot, amazing, wonderful, but, right, and quite frankly, if you don't have the opportunity to give that this year, don't worry. But at least think about for next year, making sure you can give as much, if not more, to tzedakah, to matanot le'evyonim, when it comes to Purim, because that ultimately is the far more significant of the mitzvot that we can do to help others, that we can do to bring joy to others, that we can do to bring simcha to others. And thus we have seen six different myths, some of them more myth than others, some of which are better known than others. Number one, the whole two brachot rule is not a thing. Two different types, but it can be distinguished by taste. Two different pieces of chicken, one grilled, one schnitzel, right? They're both shahakol, but they taste differently. That in and of itself is enough. You can give all foods. That was myth number two. But myth number three is you do need to consider the people you're giving it to. It's not one size fits all. Definitely, you know, there is what to say about people who have different standards. But definitely there is what to say about people with different sensitivities, diabetics, right, health sensitivities, diabetics, celiacs, et cetera, right, people who are vegetarian, right, and then we also have people who are stringent, people who are machmir to not eat certain things for one reason or another, right, all of those ultimately we should probably be sensitive towards, right. Number four, women have the same obligation as men. Number five, you don't have to give it through a shaliach. Right, there's nothing wrong with giving it through a shaliach, but it's absolutely fine to give it yourself to the other person. And number six, while it is wonderful to give as many Mishloach Manot as possible, that must be tempered by our need to also give Matanot Le'Evyonim, and we should not skimp on our Matanot Le'Evyonim in order to fulfill as much as possible our Mishloach Manot.